No one to wave at from the rail of the liner leaving Southampton for New York. Along the pier side, waving people peered upwards towards the deck rails and waved vicariously as husbands, lovers, wives, cousins, aunts, uncles, nephews, nieces. Blood relations are never bloody with one another at partings, especially on ships and planes. I suppose it's the sense or absence of mutual abandonment. Having no one to wave at made me feel a sort of heel, a stowaway in other person's affections. So I waved back, as the liner moved out to sea, where soon only sea spray, lunging waves, the ship's wash astern, and the static invincible horizon would be left to wave at. I waved at tugboats, freighters, dredgers, wharfside cranes. I waved at a plane's bright winking wingtip lights. I waved at the smoke from the ship's funnel, trailing upwards at an angle of 40 degrees exactly to stern, 140 exactly to prow. Precision at time of departure keeps the flag flying, the turbines throbbing, the heart ticking, the pulse beating, the flagging spirit from flagging. I waved at all those anonymous wavers, waving from the wharf across the widening waves, as the ship's band, Nil Desperandum, played jazzed up musical hits from South Pacific. For Christ's sake, it's the Atlantic we're headed for. Columbus, Christopher Columbus, he crossed it for Christ's sake. That's why they called him Christopher, bearer of Christ. But let it pass, it was before our time anyway, and anyway the name Christopher has been struck off by Rome from the list of officially approved canonized saints of the church. My own son, Christopher, age 10, is mentally handicapped. He'll never make great discoveries, geographical, navigational, theological or otherwise. He walks, feeds himself, clutches my hand, laughs, doesn't talk, but waves frantically at nothing and everything in particular. Anyway, I waved from the deck rail at everything and nothing in particular, and felt better for it, till it occurred to me that possibly all those others beside me at the rail were waving for the same reason, at no one or nothing in particular. That was at 6 p.m. At 6:30 precisely, six warning blasts from the ship's siren convened us for mock emergency drill at our respective assembly points. All those comfy-looking, bloated-looking, orange-coloured life jackets gave us collective comfort. We tied the strings tightly round our middles and strutted, cock of the walk, mock of the walk, self-savers, wavers, at life and disaster and death. I'll never scoff again at that word, togetherness. Never. Words like people, warts and all, grow on us like warts, people and all. Nothing is dispensable. Nothing. Viva togetherness. Viva all wavers with no one to wave at, waving at nothing and everything in particular. Viva Christopher. Viva la vie. Viva, viva. Viva, viva. Viva all voyagers. Viva brave new world. Viva grave new world. Viva togetherness. Fair forward voyager. Adieu to childhood. Adieu to innocence. Adieu to epiphany. No, childhood never ceases. Epiphany never ceases. Like life itself, our voyage is our destination. In the dawn, armed with a burning patience, we shall enter the splendid cities. Oh, if everyone was suddenly everyone else. Mona Lisa and Demons at Penn Station, New York. Little girl, standing on the main concourse at Penn Station, I failed you. Waiting with the other waiters for the train to Philadelphia, I watched your mother grip your two wrists hard, shake you hard, look at you hard, the relevance, if any, of your offence, if any, no longer relevant. "Answer me," she said. I think she said. I had to lip-read because, just then, the metallic-voiced announcer announced my metallic departure from stairway number 6 for Philadelphia. 6 times I counted, that woman shook you like an object she objected to. White knuckle, 1,000 bucks, solitaire, sparkling hard at her hard anger-sparkling eyes. And you, grave-faced, pigtailed, frightened, griefed out your 10-year-old grief in silent, unsparkling isolation. I should have said to her, in my special child protector's voice, "Stop, madam, you won't break a little girl's spirit, or even our wrist that way, madam. But, madam, you'll break her love, which, madam, I assure you, madam, you need, madam, more than you'll ever realise, madam." Or maybe to you, in my special grown-up defender's voice, "Don't be sad, little girl. Your mother's not herself. She's het up, flustered, tired from packing for her Florida vacation. It's deadly, little girl, trying to decide what to pack and what not to pack. Grown-ups, little girl, have so many things in their minds that they almost go out of their minds. Actually, little girl, your mother loves you, actually. Though I guess she's got a funny way of showing it." But I stayed silent, looked at your mother with as good an imitation as I could manage of your hurt, your helplessness. She saw me, smiled, a demon Mona Lisa smile, linked her arm in a man's, your father's, who looked as if you didn't exist, and said something funny, presumably funny, that made your mother smile again, that demon Mona Lisa smile. Then the man, your father, recounted the suitcases, paced the concourse, navy blazer, clean-shaven, dutiful, perspiring, blinking his eyes under his rimless spectacles, like the perspiring, navy-suited, dutiful attendant in the Louvre in Paris, pacing out lifelong protection to a billion-dollar canvas smile. "Little girl, I failed you. I said nothing." I shuffled off, perspiring with two overheavy suitcases to Stairway Number 6 for Philadelphia. Looking back before I escalated to a lower level, where the black locomotive hissed its steaming welcome to all who'd escalated to a lower level, you were looking at me, letting me know you knew I'd failed you, like all the other forward-faring strangers on the concourse, who had somewhere better to go, something better to do, than comfort a little girl lost in a world of grown-up black locomotive hardness. Little girl were damned, mothers, fathers, attendants in waiting, strangers in flight from love, in black locomotive plush compartments to Philadelphia or sunny Florida. Damned, little girl, damned. All of us, damned. Enough, enough. Leave me alone, though I know you won't. Let me be me. Let me be free. Let me be out. Out and up, up to the rustle, up to the jostle, up to the hustle, up to the surge, up to the purge, up to the surge and urge and purge of life on the street, up to the anonymous walkers on the sidewalk, the anonymous talkers on the sidewalk, the anonymous faces, afflicted and unafflicted. But which are the afflicted? Which are the unafflicted? Is there a difference between them? Was there ever? The Unafflicted, or Fifth Avenue Blues. Today a tow-away truck towed away a green and silver Cadillac illegally parked at the junction of 34th Street and 5th Avenue. As it moved off, incongruously hitched to its inferior's posterior, the owners, man, woman, two children, arrived just in time to see their $20,000 illusion of security disappear. The woman wailed on the man's shoulder, the children wailed, touching their mother's skirt. Passers-by, passed by, laughed. One snorted in angry disgust. They have little to cry about. Suppose they were in drought-afflicted Africa, famine-afflicted India, bomb-afflicted Israel or Syria, freedom-afflicted China or Soviet countries, hijacked-afflicted aircraft, old-age-afflicted institutions, leprosy-afflicted leper colonies, earthquake-afflicted earthquake areas, typhoon-afflicted typhoon areas. Ha! Then they'd have something to cry about. Ha! Yet the woman's tears were as real as those of a woman in Northern Ireland whose child or husband or both had just been blown to bits. The children's tears as real as those of orphans in Ethiopia, Cambodia, Israel, Syria, parched Africa or India, beside their parents' mute indifferent corpses. The man's upper lip, stiff as that of a blindfolded, captured freedom fighter, awaiting interrogation, in other words torture, from other freedom fighters, because he happened to get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time. Misfortune isn't something strangers can measure. Every misfortune is personal, and every misfortune is a death, as real death. Admittedly, the couple in New York will get their car back after payment of a hefty fine. But life will never again be fine, as they like to believe it was before this misfortune. For them, as for all other victims of the uncodified law of averages, menace will always menace. Seeing things in the proper perspective is the improper privilege of the unafflicted. Is this then a touch quivering me to a new identity? Me then and me now. Me now and me soon. Is it time to move forward, forward and outward to new destinations, new destinies? Or time maybe to move inwards also? Every life is a voyage of discovery. Every poem is a voyage of discovery. Every night is the start of a new dawn. In the dawn, armed with a burning patience, we shall enter the splendid cities. Night train. All night, the train did roar, while I lay deep in sleep did lay me down, but not with tending angels, devils rather, though I had rather not, did roar repose. Sour, sour repose, sick traveller who knows the sickness of the ingrown unsublime mind that minds not, minding not the mind. All night I burned, did burn, did oh so burn with fever in my bunk that moved and moved, railroading westward, courtesy Amtrak. Compartmented did my slumber steal demented images of disaster, twisted coaches all derailed. That blue-jeaned lover and his blue-jeaned lass assailed the dusk of dusky dome car, questing, questing. Now, still in blue jeans, tongue stilled, understand. It was a dream. The train did stand, storm-bound in night Nebraska. Dark, all dark inside the coaches. Across the tracks, live cables. My red coat night attendant, he did say. Say, man, at breakfast, that was some storm last night. Man, me and you is lucky, I say, man, that cable didn't fall across our way. Because, man, 6 hours late is better like, I say, than late forever, man. You know what I mean, man? Brainstormed, be calmed, I say I do. It figures. Is this then a touch quivering me to a new identity, a new freedom, a new perspective on freedom, a new form of epiphany, not recollection but isness, not looking backwards or inwards but looking forward and upwards? This is the business of life, this is the business of love. Time to fly then like Daedalus, up and up and up, closer to the sky, closer to the sun, closer to the mystery, closer to the truth, closer to innocence and ardour and song. Whole Earth Festival in Northern California. Fly to be free. The amplified voice of the guitar-playing singer amplifies over the amplified amplification system at the Whole Earth Festival at the University of California campus at Davis, California. Fly to be free, fly to be free. Fly to be free, shout the 4,000 unamplified voices of the suntanned, barefooted young men and women from Davis, Berkeley, San Francisco, Oakland, Sacramento, crowding the sun-drenched quad of the University of California campus at Davis, California. Fly to be free, fly to be free. Leaping like acrobats, like kangaroos, like salmon, like Maori warriors and maidens, like frolicking space pioneers. These suntanned Californian aspirant flyers, some high on grass, all high on rock and clean air and solar energy and yoga and Zen and leather and straw sombreros and Indian necklets and bracelets and handmade sandals and belts and Jesus loves you and save the porpoise population and boycott letters and transcendental meditation and ban atomic power. Fly, all fly, in fervent transported hops, a foot or two above the sun-scorched grass of the University of California campus at Davis, California. Ignoring the side stands, ignoring the ice cream, ignoring the Coca-Cola, ignoring the Pepsi-Cola, ignoring the popcorn, ignoring the peanuts, ignoring the law of gravity that pulls them back to Earth. Fly to be free, fly to be free. Oh, if only they, like Daedalus, could fly higher and higher and higher, up and up and up, close to the high Californian sun, they'd melt into wingless angels, unfurling their goodness, unfurling their song, unfurling their ardor, unfurling their faith, unfurling their energy above the scorched and darkened earth, urging the handful of still earthbound survivors to abandon all forms of firm stands for or against all forms of terrestrial bondage, follow the law of universal hope and levity. Fly to be free, fly to be free. Children dancing on lava. Freedom and fear of freedom, silence and fear of silence, speech and fear of speech, and laughter, the most poetic thing in life, laughter. When did the transition occur from man-like ape to ape-like man? Was it when grunts and cries began to be articulated into a language? Or did animal become man when its coarse mouth was curved into a smile for the first time? Certain advantages and disadvantages of being a gorilla. Today, Thursday, May the 20th, in this bicentennial year of these United States of the US of A, today I made headlines, feature, picture and all, on page 6 of a Northern Californian newspaper. Not bad, eh? For a non-Californian immigrant American poet of 5 years standing. I mean, it goes to show that the US of A values poetry and poets. Celebration from chaos, my headline read, in large case type. Not bad, eh? Not bad. Coco, the female gorilla, 4.5 years old, made page 1. I guess at first I was a bit jealous. Don't get me wrong, not professionally jealous, just because this vertebrate youngster, making her press debut at Stanford University campus, speaks 225 words in sign language, and I don't speak one. Or because Coco's tuition is given by a glamorous grad student and financed by the National Geographic Society, while I, unchaperoned and unsponsored, chart and chatter my own way, with words and forceful images, at God Save Us poetry readings, where no one in the audience would be one bit amused or excited if I, like Coco, put both arms around every nice-looking girl, manifesting a special liking for those wearing red, especially red blazer jackets, which Coco prefers even to bananas, rolling their flaxen Californian heads down to hers and brushing their cheeks and mouths with enormous affectionate lips. I mean, no one takes that sort of carry-on from poets, even at poetry readings, where the most profound drivel is rapturously applauded, provided it's spoken by someone who keeps a respectable distance between himself and his audience, after which he's permitted, indeed encouraged, to relax into a normal voice and talk again in normal human language at everyone's level, shake hands, inscribe copies of his book, even kiss the tips of the warm Californian noses of the co-ed student recipients who never wear red blazer jackets or welcome any affectionate rough stuff from not-so-enormous lips. I mean, why should I be jealous? After her performance, front page headline and picture notwithstanding, Coco must spend part of her time in a trailer on Stanford University campus and part in the San Francisco Zoo, where less fluent, shaggy-haired gorillas squat on the straw behind bars and gaze with enormous, sad brown eyes at the visiting Sunday fellow vertebrates on the other side of the bars, who howl with delight every time their fellow vertebrates on the wrong side of the bars do something vaguely human, like peeling a banana or swinging from a trapeze or protruding their pink tongues or holding out their pink-palmed hands for peanuts or candy or other goodies. No, I'm not jealous. Coco and I, and you also, whether you know it or not, are in the same fix. Words, sign language, creation from chaos, our common bond, helping us to sustain a lifetime's bondage to birth and death, language and silence, liberty of sorts, freedom of sorts, the pursuit of sorts, of happiness of sorts. Still, I'm glad Coco made the front page, and not me. To animate the inanimate is the real business of poets and sign-speaking gorillas. Coco is doing a finer job. I've got a larger vocabulary, more artful rhythms, images that sometimes haunt, music and truth of sorts. But even the deaf and dumb understand and respond to Coco's 225 sign language words. There are certain advantages, as well as disadvantages, in being a gorilla. Is this then a touch quivering me to a new identity? No malice, no anxiety, free of the coils and toils of language, free to be free, free to convey to others what we are, free to realize that there is no such thing as a lone struggle, no such thing as a lone hope, free to grasp the truth, free to be ourselves, free to be others, free to truly love, free to truly be, free to be free. Is this then a touch quivering me to a new identity? At midnight, in the kitchen, discerning love, possibly for the first time. Is this then my poetic destiny? A recurring decimal point of love received, love lost, love retrieved, love received again. In the kitchen, with my 12-year-old daughter, Luce, intact, trusting, accepting, as with my mother so long ago, in a different kitchen 3,000 miles away, a different city 3,000 miles away, a different country 3,000 miles away, singing to a different melody. Leave me alone. I know you won't. I know you won't. I know you won't. I know you won't. The alchemy of love perceived, the privilege of love retrieved. Adequately. I mean, adequately. Lucy, at last night, I loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, which is as long as anyone can love anyone else adequately, I mean adequately, though all of us plead otherwise, God help us, which means he couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't, if he weren't a God of love, and whether we believe in God or not, or say we do or don't, a God of anything else but love would be as absurd as life without love, which it is, God help us, for most of us, most hours, most days, most weeks, most months, most years, most of the measurable, immeasurable time, watching time, counting time, wasting time, killing time, marking time, keeping time, spending time, saving time, losing time, gaining time, asking the time, giving the time, day by loveless day, night by loveless night, time-wise failing to be time-wise, love-wise failing to be love-wise, but Lucy at last, love-wise, Lucy-wise, I loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, which is as long as anyone can love anyone else, adequately, I mean adequately. Lucy at last night, I loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, from midnight till 1 a.m. in the fluorescent-lighted kitchen of my poet on campus home, where I dodge in and out of the limelight, like light dodging dark, like dark dodging light, like life dodging death, like death dodging life, like time dodging time, like love dodging love. Lucy at last night, I loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, which is as long as anyone can love anyone else adequately, I mean adequately. Child, my child, pyjamaed like a storybook child, you sat too big now for my knees beside me at the kitchen table and laughed, while I, who can't draw, drew pencil sketches of Lucy at 2 with Teddy, Lucy at 6 with doll, Lucy at 8 with cat, Lucy at 10 with dog, Lucy at 12 with daddy, sitting at the kitchen table at midnight, at home, 3,000 miles from home, drawing sketches with daddy, drawing laughter from Lucy, drawing love, I mean love, from daddy, who thought he couldn't draw, who thought he couldn't love, adequately, I mean adequately, even Lucy, lovable, loving Lucy, but Lucy, at last night, I loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, which is as long as anyone can love anyone else adequately, I mean adequately. I mean, like a 12-year-old child, lying awake in the dark, who gets up at midnight because she hears our father groping awake in the light, in the kitchen, at home, 3,000 miles from home, not homesick, not self-sick, not love-sick. Because, Lucy, at last night, he loved you adequately, I mean adequately, for an hour's time, which is as long as anyone can love anyone else adequately, I mean adequately.